Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Here's something fascinating that Ross says. It's a fantastic song, but it's about apartment drinking game, also known as Apate, in Korean. It's a popular drinking game as well. And he's actually sent us the rules. Well, we can't do that in January, can we? Can't do that in January because January is all about being, I don't know, sober and being thin and being lean, mean, fighting machines. I mean, at least until the 15th of January, and then it all falls apart. So that's why we wanted to chat to our next guest, well, actually our first guest of the morning, Nicholas Engel, who is going to be joining us in a short while. And he'll be just to talk about this, because people like me irritate people like Mukundi, because we come back very gung-ho, very, very excited about the possibilities of the year ahead, and then we irritate Mukundi in the gym for 15 minutes, and then we give up our membership if we can, which is not an easy thing to do. You normally have to die first in South Africa, but that's something completely different. Nicholas Engel, who is, of course, well known to us, medical Mondays, even this Thursday. Nicholas, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I was dying to come in and go, it's the Disco Medical Monday show.
I know. Hey, I'm chatting with... Exactly. Except this time we're chatting to you as the expert, because and I say it as a joke, but it's actually quite a serious thing, because we do we go away, or even if we don't go away, we have extra time in December, and we hopefully kind of recalibrate a little bit, and we recognize that we need to be healthier, eat better, drink less, exercise more. And then we come back with the best of intentions, and 15 minutes later, it's all gone. Why?
Absolutely. I think there are a couple of reasons. We make the resolution sort of at the time we're feeling really, really bad. We're feeling weak.
And Nick, if I could just ask you to,
sure.
It's coming across a little bit loud for our listeners on your side. If you can just slightly turn that down.
Bring down my volume with pleasure.
There we go.
All right.
I mean, it's probably something you're quite used to. Nick, bring down your volume. Anyway. So
always. In the gym a lot as well from clients.
Right. Okay. So take us through it.
So I think if we look sort of at the end of the year, for most of us, we work the year, we take off December and sometime in January. At the end of the year, we're hammered, we're finished, we make the resolution to get back into gym. We're going to get into shape, we want to be optimal. But we come through January, we've had a good rest, we've eaten well, we've slept well, we're feeling a lot better. We get into the gym and suddenly we forget how bad we were feeling towards the end of the year potentially. And then life gets in the way. And I think really the biggest challenge that we face and the biggest reason that we stop training is that we prioritize everything in our life and around our life over ourselves. We keep forgetting that we're the machine that has to be serviced and maintained. You know, a Formula One car keeps replacing its engines. Even an old Toyota has to be serviced every, 200,000 kilometers. But we keep giving over priority slowly because we forget how bad we were feeling. And that's really the challenge that we're sitting with.
So how do we bottle that? Because now we know that we don't feel good when we don't look after ourselves, and we decide we're going to look after ourselves. But in fact, I'd be interested to know from your experience, how many of the January exercise resolutors continue?
I think if you're looking at big box gyms, your commercial gyms, it's terrible because, as you said, you sign up a 12 or 24 month contract. And I would say that there's a percentage of about 70% that fall off at least by March, where people are really giving up. I mean, those stats are based on what I've experienced. Mm-hmm. We have a much smaller gym where it's one-on-one, it's personal, and people are more committed. Also, interestingly enough, is that we don't have contracts. So perhaps that could also be something that the bigger gyms could look at. If you don't have a contract and you don't have to renew, or you're not tied in, you have to pay each month and effectively renew each month. It's at the forefront of your mind that you're doing this for yourself. And I think the lesson really that people have to learn is this, that you will either look after your body, and particularly when we're young, and Howard, we're young. We actually really are.
Well, I don't know 100%. About you. I am.
No, you are. I mean, you survived shopping in 60 degrees in your yes. You survived.
And humidity of all sorts of things. It was soup.
Absolutely. Absolute soup. So we slowly give away our youth and our mobility and our strength and our energy, and we usually only realize it when it's too late that that's the problem. So it has to be a balance, unfortunately, within human nature between pain or loss of mobility and energy and the idea that, okay, we want to get some of that back. The real thing is to make a commitment to yourself, whether that's a contract or something. But the best thing to do, and I'm not trying to sell anything here, is to get a trainer, to get someone that you're accountable to get a training partner, and have someone to say that, listen, you know, I don't feel like going to gym, but I don't want you to be there without me. I had a friend of mine who was in the recce, and he said what got him through selection, and this is a nice Jewish accountant, which is amazing. What got him through selection when he really couldn't go on was the understanding that he had to push for his mates and his friends. So I think a buddy, someone you can be accountable to in the gym that's going to push you through, whether that's a trainer that you're paying money to or someone that you're training with.
And how do you suggest you start? Because do you focus on, as you've said, maybe mobility? Do you focus on improving your fitness level? What is the best way to start that you don't burn yourself out, because you know, we also have this no pain, no gain thing. So we go into the gym forgetting that we haven't been there for 2 years, and we go back to thinking where we were and we hurt ourselves.
That's such a great question. And I think that this is probably one of the biggest catalysts for people stopping coming back to train. We really, you know, Dan Wolf, when I went into treatment with him, said something wonderful to me. Take everything you're doing and divide it by 10. So honestly, for 3 months, go to gym and focus only on mobility. Even before that, get someone that you want to go walking with. Just walk around, go for a 30-minute walk 3-4 times a week. And I think that's really the thing. Pull it back tremendously. This is where a trainer or a coach can really be a huge help, where you tell them, listen, you don't want to burn out. All of our new clients that we start working with are saying to me, when are we going to up the level? When are we going to up the level? That's because you really want to be very gentle with the body. Mobility and flexibility are huge because we sit so much. And it's about getting to the point where you're saying, really, you want to up the level a bit. You really want to up the level a bit. That it's almost feeling like a waste of time what you're doing, but then always check in with yourself in terms of your mobility and flexibility. And, you know, food diaries are something that's very, very common. I would very much encourage people to write down every day their training in a book, not any. I mean, look how glittery and shiny mine is. I have a very shiny notebook. But write down what your training is and also how you feel after each session that you can go back and reference.
When you talk about training, is that does training exist only in the gym, or does a trainer look at you holistically and saying, right, now you've had a very nice session in the gym, you're not coming tomorrow, make sure you do a 20-minute, 30-minute walk or whatever it would be. I know it didn't used to be that. I just wonder if it's changed a little bit to be as, you know, to be broader and perhaps online trainers I see on Instagram, social media. There's a lot of people who train people online. So I wondered if the nature of training and personal training has changed.
Absolutely. So training has really evolved, particularly since the pandemic. Online has become a lot more popular. You know, corporate and online are the majority of our business, and where we have the corporate clients coming into online. Because the thing is this, that online training is great, provided that, and I had a chat with a coach in the one of the old Eastern Bloc countries about online training and developing it. And the problem with the modern online training that I see is it's very much a send me a video of your training session and I'll send you notes. Now, I can understand that's important for people because there's a budgetary constraint. But particularly in South Africa, because of our exchange rates, we're really cheap as trainers. You know, rates are from 450 Rand to 1200 Rand for online sessions. And a community. So with us, we have a group of people training, whether that's, you know, and the great thing about the online training, just to go down this path quickly, you might have grandparents in South Africa, two kids in Australia with their kids, and a son in Israel with their kids, and they're training together three times a week. So now the kids are getting to spend 3 hours, even though it's online, cool with their idea. Grandparents. You know, and it's for family connection. So I think we really have to focus on family connection with regards to online training or some form of community, that you're not training alone and you're not just sending videos. Because the emotional connection and that emotional benefit, that mental health benefit of being in a community and effectively suffering together is so valuable. And again, the gym itself, the physical gym, is really, really important. And the point that you made about the trainer saying, you train today, go for a walk tomorrow, that's probably the most important thing in consistency after having a training partner or a coach, where you don't give yourself 2 to 3 days between training sessions, and then you delay it the third day and the fourth day, and eventually you turn around, it's July, and you haven't trained for 2 months. So the fact that you go to gym and you train, then you go for a walk the next day, or you train, you go for a swim, these type of things. Also, do what you love. If you want to go and play a sport like paddle, or find a cricket league, or find a rugby league for seniors, that's something to do as well. So it's not just about moving weights in a gym. It's about moving. That's the priority. It's getting out there. It's moving. It's having the mobility. You know, Howard, going to Cape Town is the most wonderful experience out of season, because you see what I like to call the Jewish yoga grannies, ladies in their 80s and 90s walking that promenade at 6 in the morning at a pace I can't keep up with. And that's amazing, the thing. We don't give away, we don't lose our mobility and our strength. We give it away.
That's actually so, so interesting and so frightening. I've heard different things about walking. How valuable is walking?
There is nothing more beneficial to the human body, mind, heart, head than walking, because it's free, it's easy to do, and you know, it's you're out side in the fresh air, it's using everything that we do. You can enhance it by the most beneficial movement for the human body is a squat. That really is the thing that fires up our nervous system. It, when done correctly, it hits everything within the body. But those of us who squat know that it has a little bit of an impact on the body the next day. The next most beneficial movement for the human body is a loaded carry. So whether that's taking 2 500-ml bottles of water and going for a walk, or for people, take your groceries if you live in an apartment and walk up the stairs with them. When you go shopping, park as far away as possible and do trips with your grocery bags. Those are, they're called farmer's carries, loaded walks. That is hugely beneficial. If you just walk, where you haven't done any exercise, you will drastically improve the quality of your life.
Okay. And before I let you go, it's not just about exercise. We mentioned alcohol, and this is very much a focus that you have on addiction. But that's this whole lifestyle. It is in alcohol, it's eating correctly, it's exercising. What are some of the skills that you, or some tips that you could give people that you've learned from that journey?
Sure, absolutely love that. I think very, very simple. Any bad lifestyle. So I'm going to be honest. You know, I like to go a little bit wild with what I eat over December. Not too fanatical about it. I had two margarita pizzas last night. You can hear my voice is a little bit raspy. I'm a little bit fuzzy. I've got clouded because I don't like gluten during the year. It just doesn't make me feel good. So to answer the question, very simply, alcohol, food, smoking, all of these things. If you're waking up in the morning and not feeling great and optimal, and you're going to gym or you're going for a walk sounds dreaded, then you know what you're doing for your body is not great. Our bodies are far smarter than we are. When you wake up and you're not drinking, you don't have a hangover, you haven't eaten, and I'll use the word badly, you haven't eaten to support your health and well-being, then you know you're not going to feel great. But when you have, you're hydrated, you've eaten well, you've eaten light, you're going to wake up in the morning, feel great, and it's much easier to go for a walk. So a simple thing is, if you going for a walk in the first thing in the morning feels terrible, you have to change what you're doing the day, the week, the month beforehand. And that's the yardstick. Use how you feel as the yardstick for if you're doing what you're doing correctly. Now, when I was drinking 6-7 days a week, up to 20 drafts, feeling terrible was my norm. So you have to also understand, did I feel like this in primary school?
And you get used to it.
Yeah, that's it. So you really have to go back, like, hang on, is this really how I want to feel? Is this optimal? Because when feeling terrible becomes our new normal, that's also an indicator that we're going to be getting into trouble health-wise.
That is where we leave it. Nicholas Engel, thank you. As always, a very, very important conversation as we head into January and we try to maybe readjust a little bit,